We are talking today with Steve Thompson from Oklahoma Farm Bureau. Steve, of course, represents the Farm Bureau membership from across the state at the state capitol, working on legislative activities. And Steve, let's talk a little bit about this week, back to work this week for the state legislature, and they've been busy.
Absolutely. They have come back and been quite active. You know, they had told us that they'd be back for a couple of weeks and handle the budget and just a very small number of policy issues. And while they held true to their word and handled the budget in a very quick fashion, they have really drifted into a lot more policy measures than what I think they had led us to believe to begin with. And so that's what we're sort of sorting through now. But the first item up was all the state budget business.
Let's talk a little bit about it now. Obviously, they came up with a budget. Maybe kind of summarize some of the highlights in your mind, especially for rural Oklahoma, that budget does include.
Well, you know, as everybody knows, we're in a little bit of a uncertain territory in kind of all facets of our life. And with besides the pandemic issues, most folks realize that the state budget has taken a big hit due to the decline in the price of oil and gas recently. And so they had quite a challenge this session with the budget. I think they referenced on the floor that they felt like they've completed three different budgets this one session as the numbers kept changing as they went along. But during the shutdown, second half of March and pretty much all of April, they went ahead and finished the final version. And while it's not great, I think it holds the line pretty steady for most. There's some small cuts. I think the average cut to a state agency is around 4%. The folks at the Department of Ag took just maybe a slightly bigger one than that. And the folks at the Department of Education that goes out to all our public schools had a little smaller one. And we're hoping with some federal emergency dollars they can keep the education for the state flat where it was at for the year. And so they really kind of moved money around from the reserve accounts. You know, everybody knows that the rainy day fund is there to try to balance out the hard times. And so they were able to pull it back to a kind of a minor downturn as far as the state budget goes. And I think the largest concerns that you continually hear about are where we'll be at this time next year and the year after that, because we're running pretty low on our reserve funds. And so there's not much to cover us if we continue with a declining economic activity like we've seen recently.
Now, did they have to basically address both the current fiscal year as well as the new fiscal year that starts July 1?
Well, yes, they popped back into session for one day in April and shored up the current, what they call fiscal year 2020 that ends in June, because they were projecting a revenue failure of a pretty big proportion there. And so they moved some money around from some of the reserve accounts to plug that to keep everybody whole through the end of June. So agency budget shouldn't see any disruptions throughout the rest of this fiscal year. But the new numbers where you'll have a few small cuts will begin July 1st. But they handled this year back in mid-April. And when they came back last week here in May, they went ahead and set the course for fiscal year 2021 and moving forward effective July 1st.
And, of course, the news yesterday afternoon, after that was passed by the House and the Senate, the governor vetoing those measures, and the lawmakers quickly responded.
Yeah, it was as we talk about it, highly unusual in a lot of ways, and maybe none more so than the budget deal that they initiated last week and announced, first time in my career, 25, 30 years. It was just leaders of the House and Senate making the presentation, and the governor's office wasn't represented and really wasn't referenced until the Q&A by the media afterwards. And so they had had some communication breakdowns between the governor's staff and the appropriations leaders in the House and Senate. And so the legislature went ahead and completed the budget without the governor's input the last probably month and a half. And so the governor, I think, had some issues with the way that it was constructed. And he vetoed, I believe, four different measures, three that diverted some money around into and out of certain funds and accounts. And then the overall what they call general appropriations bill that is sort of the omnibus spending bill that sets all the amounts for everybody. And which is pretty rare in and of itself. But beginning within the hour yesterday afternoon, after those vetoes became official, the Senate convened and overrode one of those. And then by the time the evening was done, the House and Senate had each side passed those measures again with a two-thirds majority needed legally to become law, notwithstanding the governor's objection. So they went ahead and pressed on, and that's how the budget will look this year. And I know that a lot of folks are just sort of waiting and watching to see how things progress from here with the rest of the policy bills that are in play. But the governor and the legislature probably are not real friendly with each other right now with the way things are going.
Let's talk a little bit about beyond the budget. There have been some policy issues and some bills that have directly involved agriculture.
Yeah, it's been a much busier week and a half at the Capitol than what we expected. They reopened the Capitol officially to the public last week with some limited access. There's a minor health screening when you enter the building, and some of the common areas outside of the chambers are closed. And offices are really for appointment only, and so kind of a limited engagement with the legislature. But they had mentioned they'd have 5 to 10 policy bills they took up, and I think we all assumed that was for the remainder of May. But heck, they've done 5 to 10 each morning and each afternoon, and so we've worked on a number of things. And really, whenever they were shut down for the last half of March and all of April, we missed so much of the regular legislative process that I think the most folks take for granted that part of the grind throughout the spring, because we didn't have our second round of committees in the legislature where you can really apply a close eye and a filter to think. You know, the first round, you have so much legislation coming out that it's really kind of a shotgun approach to weeding a few things out. But then that second round, you really take a deeper dive and either improve some legislation or some things that just get left behind. And sometimes that's for good reason. And so we saw all of the bills that were slated for committee get moved direct to calendar so that they go straight out onto the floor. And so we've had a number of things that popped up. There was a bill proposed to really a complete rewrite of our hemp laws somewhat overnight that we had to engage with the House to keep off the floor. And there were some measures that would really kind of gut some of our food safety laws as far as what can be sold from a producer directly to a consumer. And instead, we thankfully had some improvements to how farmers markets work and some of the way those businesses have evolved in recent years. You know, we see a lot about the desire for folks to know who grows their food and to purchase directly from producers, and there are ways to make that work. And so hopefully we've done an adequate job of trying to address that evolving business, but without sacrificing anything as far as food safety. And so I know that there was a bill that Cattlemen's Association and Pork Council worked very hard on to improve our meat labeling as far as what constitutes meat. And, you know, we've talked about the term fake meat for a number of years and concerned that consumers might be deceived by that. We passed a bill to start that conversation last year as far as the regulations go, and that was really reworked and invigorated to where it has better definitions, and we hope it's more effective now moving forward. And so that if something says it meat, beef, pork, poultry, it actually comes from an animal. And I know that's been a very sore spot with our members for a number of years now. And so there's one good piece of legislation came out on that. And from the budget standpoint, the one thing I think I missed that I'd like to make sure everybody knows is that they did put in a little bit of money for a cooperative extension. I think there was about $2.8 million added to the State Department of Ag's budget that is to go on to extension. And we've worked for a number of years now. I think this may be the third or fourth year we've been able to get a little bit of a bump for them through the Department of Ag. We've had trouble working with the higher regents to get money through the typical higher ed funding formula to extension, but working with the Appropriations Committee and Secretary Arthur, we were able to get an agreement to try to help out our extension offices a little bit.
I guess one thing that was interesting to me when I had a chance to visit the state animal diagnostic lab there on campus in Stillwater, they indicated that their budget, they were at the mercy of the higher regents as well. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are within the Division of Agriculture that are a lot of times not well understood by the general public, and I don't know how well they're understood by the regents.
No, that's exactly right. And Ron, you know, several of us have talked for years about the importance of the things that go on in Stillwater under the ag umbrella. And a lot of times I think, you know, we all worry it's taken for granted because, you know, we have ample safe food on our table. Nobody worries about where it comes from or how it gets there. But we've seen some stories recently about what an absolute champion that diagnostic lab there adjacent to the vet school has been as far as testing for the virus that we've been dealing with now. And so we're really proud to have supported them over the years and have hopefully a spotlight done on shined on how important what Dr. Kuhn and the Vet College and really everybody there affiliated with the ag programs in Stillwater contribute and the value of it. And don't want to say anything good has come out of the emergency we've been through, but I think the discussions about the importance of the food supply and the supply chain in general and the folks that produce it and then work it through the system to deliver it to our consumers, hopefully folks take a little bit harder look at how important that is and how we might not have invested in that through the years like we really need to.
I know that there was one measure that popped up that I think pretty well voted on unanimously was this Oklahoma certified beef that could be used as an identification type label.
Yeah, you know, Ron, that's a very interesting item that worked its way through that, you know, we've talked about all sorts of different branding programs and whether we have a mandatory label or an optional. And I think that is something that we hope that folks gives them pride in being an Oklahoma beef producer. There's really not a plan for how that might be utilized. And I think that hopefully that our folks at the Department of Ag and their Made in Oklahoma program can figure out a way to utilize that. But I think that's maybe a starting point there. And there's a whole lot of framework that needs to be built up around that. And I know some of our folks were concerned that wouldn't apply if, like you say, you moved cattle across the border from Kansas, you know, if you had land in both places. Some of the parameters in that were a little bit tight. And so I know that there's going to be folks trying to make the best out of that moving forward. And we all know how tough times are for beef producers. So hopefully that's a positive thing for them. But I think there's a little bit ways to go before that can really be used to as a marketing tool. We have such limited processing capacity in Oklahoma. We're not sure about how much of that product can get processed in Oklahoma, but we are supportive of what Secretary Arthur and her staff there at the marketing division of the Department of Ag do, and they have a well-established Made in Oklahoma program, so hopefully they can figure out a way to utilize that for something positive.
Circle back around as far as the just the overall, you know, maybe jump up to, you know, 10,000, 20,000 foot level, looking down at this year's legislative session, your thoughts about it from a rural Oklahoma perspective.
I think we're going to look back and history will show that this was a very difficult session, but, you know, kind of like everything else we got off probably better than we might have through the cooperation and collaboration of several of our good friends out there. But, you know, nothing went normal this year. From the beginning, we were just kind of 90 miles an hour. You know, we dealt with some property tax issues that have somewhat fallen by the wayside. We had hard decisions to make as a community about how that was going to work. And we had three or four property tax bills and we were able to push back one that was a little bit too burdensome on landowners. And so we had some early victories there, but it was just kind of a battle from day one. And we're proud of the cohesive nature of agriculture in the state capitol, whether it be, you know, the chairs of our committees in Chairman Murdoch and Chairman Curbs or some of the great leaders that we have throughout there to all of us that work with the Secretary of Ag and the Governor's Office trying to promote and defend rural Oklahoma. But it was really just sort of a struggle all the way start to finish. You know, our county farm bureaus do such a great job of visiting the Capitol, and we had a robust plan built for them with our field reps to come, you know, visit their legislators every week. And that got really shut down along with everybody else whenever everybody had to work remotely for so long. So this is one for the record books that we're going to look back and say that it was very, very difficult, but it always could have been worse. But boy, like everything else, we'd sure like to things get a little bit back closer to normal for next year.
And I guess what we're going to be, without a doubt, looking ahead as far as these revenue estimates, and that's going to really drive a lot of what can be done at Lincoln Boulevard, right?
I think so. I think that things had changed so much last year for the better when the budget turned around and the atmosphere was so positive, and we were able to plug some holes and really start to think about advancing the state in a lot of ways. And now it's kind of back down to just sort of kind of hold the line and hold your breath. And we, like I said, we really need the price of oil to go back up. We need the price of all commodities to go back up. And that's one of the things our messages throughout the interim is going to be through this campaign season to our elected officials is, you know, the lifeblood of the Oklahoma economy is commodity driven. And whether it's energy or agriculture, and we're all suffering right now. And so I know that there's going to be another, you know, kind of run on property taxes next year. And certainly the one tax that we can't afford to raise right now is the one that commodity producers pay, whether they make a profit or not. And so that we move into election season here right away, June 30th, we have a primary election next week. Farm Bureau will be on the road with district, you know, Ag Fund, Political Action Committee meetings. And it's going to be an odd year to campaign in with so many restrictions on how we interact with our neighbors. But that will be, you know, how do our elected officials respond to, you know, a potential a really tight budget? You know, this year was uncomfortable, but the hand they're about to get dealt may be even worse.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Thompson, Senior Director of Public Policy for Oklahoma Farm Bureau. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.